He's got a beautiful backswing.
That's, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams coming at you, getting ready to preview one of the absolute best fields of the entire season at the 3M Open at TPC Twin Cities in Minneapolis. Yes, that is full sarcasm. This tournament gets the benefit of being sandwiched not only between the Memorial Tournament and a WGC event, but there's also a major championship the week after the WGC event. So this is not a very good spot in the schedule to draw a good field, and it did not draw a good field. We've got DJ, Koepka, and a bunch of guys. Finau's going to be there, had a chance last week. Tommy Fleetwood coming across the pond for the first time. So looking forward to breaking this one down for you. We'll still give you all of our favorite plays this week. We were talking about it before we came on the air. Taylor and I both said that we're running out the same guy in both one and done pools, but we didn't tell each other who it was. So we're going to see if we've got the same guy going head-to-head. Reminder, you can follow us on social media. Search 73rd Hole. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, 73rd Hole. You will find us. Also, rate and subscribe this podcast wherever you are listening. Glad everyone is with us on this Tuesday. Taylor, we've got Matthew Wolf defending this week at the 3M, and we've got Pat Perez in a featured group. We've got Keith Mitchell in a featured group. Chucky Three Sticks, Go Pokes, in a featured group. This is going to have a much different feel than the 8-10 strength of field that we had last week at the Memorial.
Yeah, exactly. We went from, literally, it was the strongest field of any non-major, non-WGC event ever.
Ever.
Of all time, or since they've started keeping track of the world golf ranking points. And so now we go back and we look at just the top names in the world golf rankings here in the field. We got DJ, Koepka, Fairway Jesus, Tommy Fleetwood making his first appearance back.
Great
since
nickname.
The, since
it's so the, fitting.
It is, too, with his hair. How shocked would you be if he did cut it all off? Like, that would be pretty monumental,
oh,
wouldn't it?
Oh, man. If he were to cut it all off, I would hope that they wouldn't show him on TV anymore. I wouldn't want to see it.
Well, Hoffman had the dreads for the locks for a little bit, yeah. And then he cut it off, but he didn't have the same persona that Fleetwood does.
Yeah, he doesn't, and his hair was not as magnificent as Tommy Fleetwood's.
That's true. It flows with his swing so well, because when he goes through his head and his shoulders extend, it just rocks. So
and he's in a featured group this week with Dustin Johnson and Tony Finau. That's probably the best group.
I think that's undoubtedly has to be the best group to watch there. I think it's going to be really good. It'll be interesting to see how Fleetwood plays. You and me are kind of a yin-yang on Fleetwood. I really like him. Normally, you really don't like his chances very much, so
yes,
it'll be
I very much like him. I very much don't like picking him to win golf tournaments this side of the pond.
Yes. So that would be a good way to look at it. I think he's a great player, and eventually he'll break through, just one of those guys. So then we continue to go down. Finau's in the field, who had a stumbling down the stretch at Memorial.
That's a very nice way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
Three-shot lead going into the back nine on Saturday, and He did top 10, didn't he?
I think so. I think he finished solo.
Because everybody else was going backward too.
And whenever you're playing a hard course like that, and then you get it going sideways, kind of like with Cantland, a lot of those other guys, you just get a more snowball effect than you do on course where it's a birdie fest, and there's kind of a floor on what score you can shoot, especially for these guys. So I'm kind of taking that a little bit out of consideration, just for the fact that, you know, it's just playing so hard, and I think that he'll be able to rebound just because he was playing so well before that. So some other names, you know, Paul Casey's in the field. But then once you get down here, here's somewhere where names kind of drop off just a little bit. Bern Wiesberger in the field, played last week, missed the cut.
Wiesberger.
Man, we want
Wiesberger.
Is he German? I don't think he's German. He might.
For lunch, I actually threw out on the grill a cheeseburger. Wiesberger.
Ah, there you go.
It's very similar.
You're really good at playing on words.
Same, but different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So then we go down. Eric Van Rooyen's in the field. Brendan Todd, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Matt Wolf defending, Bubba Watson. A couple guys did not show who
Brian were. Brian Harman. Scott Toy, friend of the show.
Okay, so they're definitely in the field, absolutely. Taylor Gooch, friend of the show, is in the field.
Reen Gibson?
Reen Gibson, friend of the show, is in the, is is in the field as well. Michael Gellerman, an OU player, is in the field as well. So there's some definitely local feel here, and we haven't even mentioned some of the other OSU players that are playing as well. So yeah, it definitely has some local feel to it. And I kind of have a deep down feeling, Colby, that even though I've listed off some of those top names that are playing, I think this is a week where someone that we really just completely don't expect comes out and ends up winning the title.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. So as we know, Oklahoma State Golf puts a lot of guys on the PGA Tour. I'm still trying to figure out what DraftKings algorithm is, how they determine who goes where. And this week, the one that has me confused is how Christopher Ventura, who played at Oklahoma State, won a couple times on the Corn Ferry Tour last year and the year before. But, I mean, he's a temporary PGA guy, bounces back and forth from the PGA Tour to the Corn Ferry. He's $200 more dollars than Taylor Gooch is on DraftKings. You know, Taylor Gooch has made 85% of his cuts this year in roughly 18 starts, something like that. And he's still $200 cheaper than Christopher Ventura on DraftKings? I'm trying to figure out how they come to these numbers.
I think that probably what they're doing is just going off a little bit of local form. Ventura did finish T8 down at San Antonio. It wasn't last week, I believe.
Two weeks ago.
Yeah, so he was
on the Corn Ferry.
On the Corn Ferry, and then he finished. What did he finish at? In the tour event he played, and finished up there.
He finished 21st at, I believe it was the Rocket Mortgage.
Rocket Mortgage. Yeah. So I mean, he had a top 25 there. He was a guy that I liked on DraftKings there, and I actually do like him on DraftKings this week as well. Well, I think he has just been just kind of that form thing that you're looking at. And I do think Gooch definitely has a chance to play well this week. But for some, like you mentioned, someone who has been on tour and has had that experience. And I also think, too, we mentioned last week that you just make the cut on the number like Schauffele did, shoot 2 under on the weekend, finish top 15. If Taylor would have made one more birdie or one less bogey coming in, he would have had an opportunity to do the same thing. Then all of a sudden, he might have been 76 or 7,700.
If you remember, that's what he did at Arnold Palmer earlier this year.
Exactly.
Gooch made the cut, I think, on the number and then shot like 1 under on the weekend, which was maybe field best. I can't remember. It was close.
Yeah, one of, if not the best, on the weekend. So he has the potential to do that.
Yeah, and
he
went from making the cut on the number, I think, to a top 15.
Yeah. And so that just goes to show how fickle one stroke can be and everything. So, yeah, you make a good point, but I do like Ventura's chances this week. I do think he has been on some pretty good form, and with some of the other bigger names not in the field, like I mentioned, I do think this is the week some guy just kind of comes out of the blue and holds the trophy on Sunday. And either one of those guys definitely has a great chance to do that.
Yeah, so let's talk about the course a little bit. TPC Twin Cities. This course, I was reading a preview article last night. It was described as if you gave an 11-year-old a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew and told him to design a course on one of the old Tiger Woods video games. It is random water hazards, random bunkers. Like, the very first hole is the dogleg right. There's a bunker on the right, and to carry it from the tips, to carry this bunker, which is the trouble on the hole off the tee, is a 256-yard carry. So it's just not even remotely in play for these guys on the tour. Even the very shortest hitter on the PGA Tour is going to carry that bunker. It's a golf course that has a lot of trouble, but man, it yields a lot of birdies. Last year, most birdies yielded by course on the 18-19 PGA Tour season. Fourth was Sedgefield, where they play Wyndham. Third was TPC Deer Run. Second was Detroit Golf Club, which is the Rocket Mortgage. And then first place, with nearly 100 more birdies than second place, was TPC Twin Cities. In 4 days last year, it yielded 1,976 birdies.
Whoa. And what was the number for second? Did you have the number for second?
1,895. So, yeah, about 80 more birdies. Yep,
80 more 70, birdies. So 20 more around. 20 more around, essentially.
Yeah, 20 more around by the field.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty staggering there. And it's, it's not necessarily, it's not a short course. It measures about 7,450 from what I was reading. And so it's not like distance would be an issue. And that just goes back also to even the distance debate. It doesn't really matter how long you make these courses. They're going to figure it out.
Matters
and
then, how you set it up.
Exactly.
Like, just look at last week.
Hey, that's all you have to do. All you have to do makes it simple. So we'll just even shut
or
that
Bay
argument.
Hill, same thing.
Exactly.
Matters how you set it up and conditions. Obviously, these are the very best players in the world. If they go out and the wind blows 1 mile an hour out of the south for 4 days, they're going to light up most golf courses on the planet.
If they're playing fair, at least.
Yes. If they're playing fair. If the wind's blowing 20, all golf courses have a little bit of a defense there. But, you know, we don't see that a ton on the PGA Tour. Most places that they go, the wind blows 5 to 10, and that's perfectly fine. I got more enjoyment 2 weeks ago watching the Workday and 3 weeks ago watching the Rocket Mortgage than I did last week watching the Memorial, and it's because, on the back nine on Sunday, there was drama, there were birdies, there were a lot of things going on, and I like a hard golf course, but I wanted to be close too, and just because it wasn't close last week, to me it wasn't as entertaining of a tournament. But this week, I think we're going to see several guys on the back nine on Sunday with a chance because there will be birdies to be had.
Yeah, and it's not like that watching a tournament on a hard course isn't entertaining. I mean, normally if it's the U.S. Open, we always love that coming down the stretch. If it would have been a closer field last week, if there would have been three or four of the bigger names up there with Rahm, it would have been a much more exciting finish because then instead of you know looking for a birdie, you're looking for who's going to not bogey and not make a mistake. And so, but this week is the complete yin to last week's yang. I think it's going to be a complete birdie fest, and that's why I think it brings a lot more guys into the field because it kind of sets up more for everyone's general game. We mentioned how fickle it is. Some guys on the Corn Ferry come out and can win instantly. Chris Kirk won on the Corn Ferry, then came out and was top 10 on the tour. Next week he played or some high finish. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head. But just goes to show that there's not much difference between each stage of these guys and from on a week-to-week basis, just depending on who's hot and who's not. So I feel like I'm going to keep repeating it. It's going to be hard to prognosticate a winner just because I think so many guys have a chance to win this week. Unless the only outliers here, I think, would be if someone like DJ or Koepka just decides to turn it on like DJ did a couple
and
weeks
ago. And just run away from the field.
Run away from the field, I think.
I hope that doesn't happen.
I don't either. I mean, it would
honestly,
be...
Honestly, I don't even really need one of those guys to win the tournament. I'd rather see, seven or eight guys that we've heard of, but this win would still kind of be life-changing for them. That's what I like to see out of this type of tournament.
Yeah, be one of those, maybe a first-time winner, get them some more status, get them 2 years, get that weight off their shoulders. And there's a lot of guys who have an opportunity to do that, and I think that at the time of recording, we don't have the official strength of field out yet. I wish that we did. I'll be interested to see exactly what the number is because if last week was the biggest and then this week coming up, it could be the largest difference between from a regular event to the next event in drastic point difference, if I'm making that clear.
Yeah. The strength of field differential from last week to this week. So we're going to go 8-10 down to, I would guess this week is going to have a strength of field around 200, 150?
I would guess. The Rocket Mortgage was like a 296. So I would say it'd be just slightly below that, probably around 250.
2 to 250 maybe?
Somewhere around there, if I had to guess, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Sounds about right. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break? We're going to come back on the other side. We've got ideal DraftKings lineups. We've got your best bets for the week. And this one's tough. Usually I run six guys out a week. I don't think I'm going to do that this week. I think I'm going to run out two or three, just put a little more on them. It's so random. I'm just going to take some flyers on a few guys. So we'll have all that and more coming up for you. Reminder, Junior Camp coming up next week at Bushwood down in Chickasha. Taylor helping with the instruction down there. Max Stewart, these guys are going to do a great job. So get signed up for that and make your tee time at Bushwood Golf and Country Club, 405-224-1250. We will be back on the other side. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on a Tuesday, getting you ready for this week's 3M Open. Matthew Wolf, the defending champion. Taylor, last year's tournament, the 3M, obviously not one of the tour's marquee events, But the finish last year with Matthew Wolff, Bryson DeChambeau, and Colin Morikawa was one of the best of the entire year on the PGA Tour. Bryson, after he finishes on 18, he's done. He's got a one-shot lead with Wolff and Morikawa teeing off, both one back of him. Wolff makes the, 35-40-footer for eagle from off the green to take the one-shot lead over Bryson. Morikawa then has an eagle putt to attempt to match Wolff and get in a playoff. He misses two putts. Matthew Wolff gets his first win on the PGA Tour. It was one of the more exciting finishes of the season.
Yeah, it was a hell of a start, and that's one of the things going back to handicapping this tournament. Last year was the first year that they had held this tournament here.
Yes.
So, and there's not much course history to go off of, so for that to be the way that the very first tournament went at the 3M there in Minnesota was really cool and really great for the tournament, and it'll be interesting to see how Wolff does coming back with it being, it's a little bit later in the calendar year from when he won, but at the same time, how he'll be able to defend his title when he hasn't. While he did finish second a couple weeks ago, he would probably even admit that he hasn't had the success over the last year that he would like.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He won the 3M Open last year. His best result since then was the solo second a couple weeks ago at Rocket Mortgage. So we'll see how Matthew Wolff does this week as defending champion. You want to get into our ideal DraftKings lineup, which for me does not include the defending champion. And I did not go real top heavy in this field. I don't know that there's a ton of value in going top heavy when there's only a couple names and it seems like it's just going to be totally random. So I took a lot more guys in the middle. I'll start with my most expensive guy, which is 9,400 Lucas Glover.
Okay.
Most expensive guy in my lineup, playing well lately. Sunday 62 at this event last year to finish in seventh place. So I'm taking Lucas Glover as my most expensive player this week on DraftKings.
And you will learn later even more as we go in the show that I love Lucas Glover this week. As you mentioned, just the great form. Since the return to competition, he has finished, I want to get it exactly right, 23rd, 21st, 20th, 21st, and then 38th last week. And he actually stumbled on Sunday or Saturday or the weekend, wherever it was, because he was up towards the top of the leaderboard. He stumbled somewhere along the way.
You want some more Lucas Glover stats?
Absolutely.
From Justin Ray on Twitter, has the best stats anywhere, golf stats. This Lucas Glover ranks since the PGA Tour restart among players who've played at least 10 rounds. Birdie average, he ranks 7th. Scoring average, he ranks 10th. Strokes gained tee to green, he ranks 11th. So Lucas Glover, not a guy people think about week in and week out. Certainly not last week when the field strength is 8-10, but this week, certainly a guy to keep an eye on, I think.
And he's always been a guy who searches for it with the putter, so he's a hit-or-miss guy there, but an extremely great ball striker. Davis Love, during the telecast, actually mentioned that Lucas Glover, I believe the words were, he may have said one of, but I do think he said the best driver of the ball he had ever played with, which would be saying something.
Yes, he did say that.
Yeah, he's played with everyone, essentially, because he was right in the middle. He was a little bit before Tiger and then a little bit with this newer generation. So he's played with everyone. So we'll go on to my most expensive guy that we talked about a little bit earlier in the show, stumbled, like you said, generously was the way to word it, stumbled down the stretch last 26 holes of the tournament at Memorial, but I think he'll be able to rebound a little bit this week. Tony Finau, where he be now, he is 10,900 on DraftKings, 10,900 on DraftKings. So I'm going to run with him being my most expensive guy out this week. I see a grimace on your face, Colby.
No, I do like that pick, and I thought about Tony Finau. I just don't know what last week does to him mentally, because
it is a wild card. It is.
Three-shot lead on Saturday going into the back nine. At the end of that nine, you're now trailing by four, and then you just go out, and on Sunday, you're not even in contention. You just never give yourself a chance to even really top five. He was fortunate that it didn't even go more awry, and he was able to get a solo eighth. I don't know what that does to him in between the years.
And that's what, and you mentioned a good point there, and I think that had he been a little bit more in contention on Sunday and then faltered, I probably wouldn't have picked him, because I would be more along the lines of you. But knowing the last time many ever holes that he wasn't going to be in contention probably just freed him up a little bit, knowing how hard the course was and kind of knowing it was a one horse race for however long, and then it could have been a two horse race with Ryan Palmer at some point, but he knew he was out of the tournament, so it gave him a little bit of time to kind of just let off some steam. So I personally think he'll rebound this week, but like you mentioned, Colby, can always be a wild card. So I'll go next with my second most expensive guy, and I've seen a lot of people picking him this week, been playing well. well. He actually had a positive test for COVID and has come back since then and played well is Harris English at 9,000 DraftKings. He is, I believe, on the PGA Tour Power Rankings. He is actually ranked as the number one guy. I don't believe that he deserves to be ranked that high. I don't think he is.
No.
You know, what is he? You said he's 35-1 this week to win the tournament.
Harris English. I think that's what we were at.
And who's the highest DJ?
9-1. Here we go. 28-1 is what I'm showing Harris English at right now. DJ currently 9-1.
And that's the favorite
bookie. Yep.
What's Koepka?
Koepka's 12-1.
12-1.
A little bit behind
and
DJ.
And then what's behind that? What's next after that?
And then Tony Finau is 14-1. Fleetwood 16-1. Then after that, we get into the 20s and 30s with guys like Casey Wolf, Bubba, Russell Henley's 30-1. Lucas Glover, who we've both said that we like, is 30-1. So, and then Harris English. Actually, at my bookie right now, I'm showing him at 35-1. Those were other odds I'm looking at. So 35-1, Harris English, which is the exact same odds. My next pick, a guy that I like, and, you know, he's very hit or miss for me. I pick him quite often. Usually has pretty good value is Erik van Rooyen. Mm-hmm. I think he can get hot. He can make a lot of birdies. He's a good ball striker. So give me Erik van Rooyen this week, and I'm just going to hope he goes out and makes a ton of birdies.
Well, and I was actually reading earlier, he went to college at the University of Minnesota.
Bingo, bingo, bongo.
So he might have a little bit of local feel there and potentially has played the course a time or two. I don't know if he has, but I'm sure if he went to University of Minnesota, they'd made a trip or two up there to play that course.
Yeah, no doubt. I actually didn't know that he went to the University of Minnesota, so good to know. I feel more confident now.
There you go. Absolutely. That's what I'm here for.
We'll go ahead and lock him in. And then my third most expensive guy, Henrik Norlander. Henrik Norlander's playing really good golf lately. He's coming off a sixth place finish at the Memorial, 31st the week before, 12th, 41st in the last 4 weeks. Didn't play this tournament last year, but I mean, the dude is just playing good golf right now. So I like Henrik Norlander. I told you I'm going mostly in the middle this week on DraftKings. So I've got a few guys in the eights, and Norlander's one of them.
Yeah, and that's my, I said copycat because you copied my next most expensive pick as well, just because, like you mentioned, he since the return to golf, he missed the cut the very first event. Charles Schwab since then has just basically improved, finished 12th at Rocket Mortgage Workday, which was at the Memorial 31st, but then Memorial the next week, finished sixth, T6. So yeah, it's hard to go wrong with that play at 8,600 in a slightly weaker field. Then my next most expensive guy at 7,600 is a guy who has been known more recently on social media for his bulk up in size than he has been for his game, but yet he has been playing really well. That is Scott Stallings. Since the return to golf, he has not missed the cut in the four events he's played. Finished sixth at the Travelers a few weeks ago. Has finished 58th at the Workday, 39th at Rocket Mortgage, and then 48th at RBC. So not necessarily on a particularly great form, but that sixth place finish and also the fact that I think that he hasn't missed a cut, so I'm going to go with someone who I feel like has a good bet to get to the weekend. And he's made the cut in some of these stronger fields, so then with it being a little weaker field, might have a better chance to keep that streak going.
Yeah, I mean, if you get a guy who makes the cut, then essentially what you need is a strong weekend, bunch of birdies. So if you can get yourself six made cuts on DraftKings this week, you're going to be doing well. My fourth most expensive guy, I've got Ryan Moore at 8,100. Ryan Moore flashes a few times a season. It's usually in weak fields. This is the type of course that you would think he would play pretty well at. A lot of hazards to avoid, but a lot of birdies to be had. So I'll take Ryan Moore at 8,100. And then at 7,900, I'm going to go with a guy who's actually less than 50% on cuts made this year, but he's playing good golf of late. And that is Sepp Straka. I know you were on Straka a couple of weeks ago.
That was my pick last week. Yep, okay, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, he had kind of stumbled on the weekend. 79-75 course was obviously playing tough, but yet still got you to the weekend.
Made three cuts in a row, too. Top 15 at Rocket Mortgage. Top 10 the week prior. Did miss the cut here last year, but he's playing much better golf than he was earlier in the year. So I like Straka, and I like him in the 7,000s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a fairly good pick for the value around there, especially with some of the other names. Just for example, at the same price as Johnny Vegas, I would like Straka over him. And then, you know, a guy who played really well last week or a few weeks ago, finished third and then missed the cut at 7,700, Will Gordon, kind of just goes to show where the prices are for this tournament.
That's, is that your next guy, Will Gordon?
No, it is not. Oh, okay. I'm just trying to do a comparison.
Gotcha.
of the prices on around that range on how I would like Straka around that price. So my next most expensive, we mentioned him earlier in the show. You didn't realize why he would be 200 more than a guy like Taylor Gooch, but I'm going ahead and roll out with him for his form, and that's Christoph Ventura.
Okay.
Finished, like we said, finished T8 a couple weeks ago at at San Antonio on the Corn Ferry, and then finished top 25 in the last PGA Tour event he played in. So for 7,300 price, I'm going to roll that out and see where it gets me. And then
was real quick before we move on from Ventura, was he the guy? You remember, what was it, maybe 4 years ago, I caddied for you in what I think was a U.S. Open qualifier in Wichita. Was he the guy who went out and shot like 62 that day?
There was an OSU player that did it, and I think it may have been him.
I think it was him. I think he shot 62 at
Wichita Country Club.
Wichita Country Club.
It's not the hardest course you ever played, but definitely demanding.
The wind was blowing 15 to 20 though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't hard. It wasn't easy to shoot under par. I made that clear because I didn't shoot anywhere close to under par. But I mean, he definitely made it look easy. And I think you are right. I think it was.
Yeah, I think he shot 62 that day. So yeah. He can definitely go low.
He's absolutely definite player. So I'm gonna roll with that. And then my cheapest guy is 6,600, a guy who you liked last week, Colby, and I'm gonna go ahead and roll with him too. Stuart Sink
playing good golf,
playing good for the price too. 6,600. I believe he's made 3 of 5 cuts since the return last couple weeks. He finished 17th at the Workday, then 62nd at the Memorial, and since the return, missed the cut at the Travelers, made the cut at the RBC, had a fairly low finish, but for a cheaper guy, fit right into the amount with some of the other guys that I liked and wanted to pick. So it was meant to be, so I'm rolling with him.
Yeah, you know, earlier we were talking about guys who have really good hair, which leads me into my next pick. Pat Perez at 7,200. Pat Perez, he makes cuts, contends a few times a year. This is the same reason I picked Ryan Moore. This just feels like the kind of week that a guy who pops with weak fields is going to pop. And I think Pat Perez has a good chance to top 10 this week, even though he's way down in value. So I like him at 72. So to round out my lineup, I've got Lucas Glover, Ryan Moore, Henrik Norlander, Pat Perez, Sepp Straka, and Erik van Rooyen as my six.
Yes, and then my six are, one second, I want to make sure I get Christoph, I'll read them. Most expensive is Tony Finau, then Harry English, then Norlander, then Scott Stallings, Christoph Ventura, and last at 6,600, Stuart Sink.
So our only overlap is Henrik Norlander, and I want to see if we have any overlap in our one-and-done pool, both our big season-long one-and-done pool and one-and-done pool here on the podcast. On the podcast, I'm leading by pretty much right at a million due to my Bryson pick a few weeks ago at Rocket Mortgage. Obviously, you know, one-and-done pools are all about picking winners. That's where you get the big money. So I'm leading by about a million right now in the one and done, even though I've only made 2 out of 5 cuts and you've made 4 out of 5, so congratulations on your cuts made. And since you're coming off,
doesn't get you anywhere.
That was somewhat of a patronizing congratulations on your cuts made and your 42k you got from Paul Casey a few weeks ago. You got 52k from Cantlay last week, which is 52k more than I got from my Rose pick. So we'll let you lead it off this week in the one and done.
Well, I'm playing catch up. We're down a little bit, but a guy who I'm going to pick in both the big one and done pool and me and Colby's one and done pool on the podcast is a guy that Colby put in his DraftKings lineup, his most expensive pick.
I hate you so much.
And I knew, and I had a feeling it was going to be it. I knew it. And we mentioned the stat. Justin Ray put it out there, how good it is.
Yeah.
I'm
rolling with great since the restart. Lucas Glover.
My one and done is a kiss of death.
You're running him out in both pools?
Both pools.
I'm running him out in both pools. I already had it picked. Before you even got here, I already had it picked.
Man, Lucas, I feel sorry for you, my friend. You might want to book your flight for Friday evening because I am the kiss of death in this pool.
I'd say there's a decent chance between the two of us picking him in both pools that he doesn't break 80. That yielded 2,000 birdies last year.
it is the definition of kiss of death. And no, we did not plan that out, but it is how it's going to work out. And in a smaller field, this is an opportunity. I don't, you know, running out of Koepka or DJ. I'd actually already used DJ earlier in the year for a 50th in Mexico, where the hell it was, but I don't feel like comfortable using any of the other big names, so I'll go out a guy who's just been playing well on form and a guy who, if he can get the putter rolling, I think will be there on Sunday.
Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, I love the way Lucas Glover is playing, and I feel like we could be staring at a Lucas Glover win on Sunday. Not the biggest purse, not the best field. You don't want to run out a big name this week in a field that could be totally random. It's probably not another week that I'm really going to be looking to use Lucas Glover. So now was just kind of the perfect time to run him out. And I hate that we were on the same way of thinking there. But I'm all in on Glover this week. This is a tournament where you just kind of have to commit to whoever you like. So he'll be one of my 3 plays this week as far as betting goes. Lucas Glover's 30-1. So I'll run out Lucas Glover this week at 30-1 as one of my 3 bets. I'm going to run out Erik van Rooyen at 35-1, a guy that I think is due it some point to win a tournament on this side of the pond. And then I'm also going to run out a guy that we both liked on DraftKings, Henrik Norlander at 55-1. Usually I put $10 on six guys. This week I'm going to put $20 on three guys because there's just not a ton of guys that I love and really want to bet on. So I'm going to bet just a little more on those three. So hopefully we're staring down either a Lucas Glover, Erik van Rooyen, or even much more preferable, the 55-1 Henrik Norlander on Sunday.
Yeah, nice. 55-1 is nice. And then I think that, like I'd said a couple times earlier in the show, I think this is the week where something like that happens, because we had mentioned on our last show just the name of winners who had won, and it's just elite player, elite player, elite player, elite player. I think that this week will be someone who, while obviously, especially golf fans, will know the name, but it'll be someone who kind of will make their stamp on the tour, essentially, would be a nice way to put it. That's how I think the tournament will go.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So one guy we need to talk about is Martin Traynor. And not because we're throwing him out as a pick this week that we want to give. Martin Traynor is 1,000-1 this week. Martin Traynor's caddy's name. You got any idea what his caddy's name is, Taylor? Top of your head?
No, I do not know. No, yeah.
We're a big fan of caddies. We're a big fan of caddies here on the show.
Oh, absolutely. They're the best.
Aaron Crawford is the name of his caddy. The reason I know this is because Aaron Crawford went to a Monday qualifier yesterday to attempt to get himself into the 3M Open. Aaron Crawford messed around, shot 63 at the Monday qualifier.
Ooh, he caught fire.
Got himself in the field. So Aaron Crawford, who is the caddy for Martin Traynor, who won last year at the Puerto Rico Open, which means obviously you can't win again. Once you've won the Puerto Rico Open, you don't win again. Those are the rules. I don't make them, but they are to be followed. Martin Traynor, right now on DraftKings, these aren't the odds I have. The odds I have, they're both the same. But on the DraftKings odds, Aaron Crawford, the caddy, is listed at 750-1 to win this week in Minnesota, while Martin Traynor, who has struggled mightily since his win in Puerto Rico, is listed at 1,250-1 to win the tournament this week. Taylor, I would say that a caddy Monday qualifying for an event and having better odds to win said event than his tour pro, not something I had on my bingo card for this year's PGA Tour season.
That is quite a storyline, isn't it? That is, and there's a lot of great. There's a lot of caddies out there who are great players and are capable of having the potential to Monday into something like this. And congratulations to Aaron Crawford. That's awesome. Hopefully he plays great and has a great week. And I don't know if this would be the time for him to, you know, have some bragging rights over old Mr. Traynor. But if he ends up beating him for the tournament, then I think that's when you can start rubbing it in a little bit.
Yeah, Crawford turned pro after high school. He's made 11 career starts on the McKenzie Tour, including four last year. This will be his PGA Tour debut. Good for him, man. Good for him. I hope he plays well. I'm going to be looking. Obviously, neither one of these guys are probably favored to make the cut, but I'm going to look on Friday afternoon for Martin Traynor and Aaron Crawford, because I would imagine that there are a little bit of bragging rights on the line this week between the two of them, because Traynor is exempt on the PGA Tour through the end of the 2021 season by virtue of his win at Puerto Rico last year. So Aaron Crawford's going to play this week, and then he's going to hop back on Martin Traynor's bag. So I would imagine some bragging rights will be in play this week, and both guys will be a little extra focused trying to beat each other, as if the caddy could beat the player, that would give him bragging rights for quite some time. So that's a story to keep an eye on.
If Aaron Crawford goes out and shoots a few more 63s, he might not be on the bag next week or whenever Traynor goes. You know, we
Traynor
saw someone
lose his caddy.
Yeah, we saw someone like Will Gordon go out there, you know, get full status. You know, obviously, Aaron Crawford would have to do a little bit more than that. He'd probably have to win. But at the same time, he could at least get into next week's event. No, I don't think he can, because it's WGC. But whenever
is there opposite field in 2 weeks?
There might be.
When's the Barracuda? The Barracuda's here in the next couple weeks.
Nevertheless, there's a tournament that he could get into. Yes. Let's look up the full schedule.
He could find himself in another tour event. Real quick, want to update everybody, too. Do have one positive test this week at the 3M Open as of right now for COVID-19. Grayson Murray tested positive. So Grayson Murray has withdrawn from the field this week in Minneapolis.
Okay, well, that's obviously horrible for Grayson. Hopefully he ends up being healthy. And we had gone through a little bit of a good stretch of with no positive tests. Unfortunately, with the way everything's going, had to assume that another one was coming at some point. So hopefully we don't have any more come out, kind of like we did last time with the snowball effect. So hopefully Grayson can end up coming back and being healthy, and we don't see any more players, caddies, meter members, or even just plain individuals in general, because we heard on the telecast that Nicholas and Barber both had it back in March and April, you know. So it's definitely a serious issue, and hopefully everyone can get over it. And looking up right now, you are right, Colby. The Barracuda is next week. So, yes, he would have
So it's opposite the WGC then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was opposite the PGA.
Yeah, no, so that, okay. they tend to do that a lot, though.
And the Barracuda, that's in, is that Reno?
That Tahoe? Is Tahoe, yep, Tahoe.
Okay, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Reno, Tahoe, is that the same thing? I don't know.
Yeah, it says Tahoe Mountain. It's in, I thought it was in Nevada, it's in California, so it's right on the border. Okay. This is the tournament Morikawa won last year.
Yes, yes, for his first career PGA Tour win, because I remember a couple weeks ago, maybe last week, you said that the strength field for that tournament was 26, so a little bit better for Morikawa a couple weeks ago at the Workday Charity Open. One thing that I wanted to ask you, and I just heard him talking about it on the broadcast this past week for the PGA Tour, is, you know, metrics that are important on the tour. And they posed the question that if you, over the next 10 years, wanted to work your way up to be the number one player in the world, and you could choose any two metrics on the PGA Tour, any two, strokes gained, total driving, putting, whatever it is, fewest putts per round, whatever the case may be, you could choose any two metrics in the game of golf you wanted to and lead the tour in those two metrics for the next 10 years, what would the two be? Tough question, so I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it because I think it's an interesting thought experiment.
It is because it depends on how you define it because, you know, if you go from a strokes gain tee to green, obviously that would be one of the best. Or scoring average, obviously FedEx points, you could say all these different random ones. Or, you know, how specific do you want to get? Are we talking longest drives, fairway percentage? How exactly do you break it down? So that's tough. So the way that I was thinking about it, I was going off of kind of breaking it down pretty simply. The simplest it could have just going off of the four main strokes gained stats. So strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approach to green, strokes gained around the green, and strokes gained putting would be kind of the four baseline that you would work with, I would say, unless you were wanting to go even a little bit deeper into that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because the thing is, so you look right now the way guys are driving the ball. A few weeks ago at the Rocket Mortgage, Bryson led the field in strokes gained off the tee, and he led the field in strokes gained putting. So it becomes a question of, you know, if you're leading the field every week in total driving or in strokes gained off the tee, then obviously you're setting yourself up for success. But then it becomes a question of, do you want to lead in strokes gained putting? Do you want to lead in greens in regulation? Because if you hit all your greens, then you're much less likely to make bogeys. I think there's a lot of different ways that you could go here. I think if it were up to me, I don't know. The game off the tee has just become so important, being able to hit it a long ways and hit it straight. I think either total driving or strokes gained off the tee would be one of my two that I would choose.
Off of the tee, I just went back and looked on it. Going back to 2013, and I'm going back even further than that, there's only been three players, even back to 2012, it's the same, and all these guys are in the top five every year. There's been three names to lead the tour in strokes gained tee to green, and I'm going back even further to 2010, and they're still all the same. Three names.
Three names? I bet I can give them to you. Rory McIlroy?
Yes.
Dustin Johnson?
Yes.
And Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson. We need one more. And the strokes gained off the tee.
Been struggling lately. Early to mid-2000s, had a lot of good years.
Oh, man. Struggling lately, early to mid-2000s, a lot of good years.
Had a lot of wins, but on the same courses.
Tiger?
Bubba.
Bubba. I was like, it can't be Tiger. Yeah. There's no way it's Tiger. Bubba, really?
Yeah. Bubba, I think three of the years, I went back to 2009, Nick Watney led it. But from 2010 to 2019, those were the only three guys that led it in strokes gained. And
Bubba racked up some wins in that time. Not as many as Rory or DJ, but Bubba racked up some wins.
No,
he's a double-digit PGA Tour winner.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're going back and look. And you look at the guys even below it. I mean, there's some guys like 1 year Ryan Palmer's up there, but even down like Jason Day's up there 1 year. You know, then there's someone like Boo Weekly, who's kind of an outlier because he's had so many putting woes. Sergio is another guy. Gary Woodland, some of the other names. John Rahm, Finau. So these are all guys who are making a lot of money and making a lot of FedEx points. So I think it'd be hard to derail from that, you know, that metric. And we also noticed on our player profile shows with Spieth and Reed, their two worst years on tour were their two best putting years.
Right.
So it goes to show that just because you're putting good doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a good year. It definitely helps, but it doesn't translate to success as we've seen with those two guys specifically.
Yeah, so I'm really torn as to whether I want to go strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained putting, or if I want to go strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach. Because if you're leading the tour in strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach, I mean, that's kind of what we're seeing a little bit a couple weeks ago from Colin Morikawa, right? Where he just hits the ball so good that he has so many looks that even if you're not putting at an elite level, you can just putt at an average level. And if you're leading the tour in strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach, you just have so many chances. So I don't know about you. That's what I'm locking myself in with those two. That's my answer, is strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approaching the green. Those are my two metrics I would choose. What are yours?
I'm going to agree with you, Colby. I'll go through the strokes gain putting leaders to kind of show you a comparison, count off the wins here, and you'll see. So in the early 2010s, Luke Donald was leading. That was when he was number one in the world, and that was kind of what kept his game going because he wasn't the longest or even one of the straightest off the tee. So then even after that, you go to Brant Snedeker led, then Greg Chalmers led 1 year, then Graham McDowell led a year, then Aaron Baddeley led 1 year. Then Jason Day led 1 year. Then the next year, Ricky led. And then we went with Greg Chalmers led it again. And then Denny McCarthy was the leader last year. So I would just go through and add up the total amount of wins there. I mean, obviously, there might be more because there's different, more names, obviously. But just think about the success that the guys have had who are drivers compared to the ones that are the generally the best putters.
Yeah, here's sense. My question, though, because if we're guaranteeing you that you can be number one in two different metrics, then if you are number one in total driving, then if you're also number one in strokes gained putting, I don't know, I feel like I'm almost talking myself into putting, even though I love my logic with strokes gained approaching the green, but the guys who you're listing off there who have led the tour in putting over the years, Brant Snedeker, you know, Greg Chalmers, Luke Donald, are not guys who were anywhere near number one on the tour in strokes gained off the tee. So if you were to combine the two, like let's take Rory McIlroy with strokes gained off the tee and let's make him lead the tour in strokes gained putting, we might be talking about a super golfer.
It could be, and here's
it's tough, man. It's tough to decide.
Well, and sometimes they translate into the other. For example, strokes gain approach to green going back, Adam Scott was the leader. Tiger led it 1 year. Henrik Stenson led it a couple years. Actually, in 2011, Luke Donald actually led in strokes gain approach to green as well.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so that was...
and it got him to number one in the world when he led in strokes gained approaching the green and strokes gained putting.
Yeah, so that could be a recipe there. Tiger led it back-to-back years in 2012 and 2013. Other guys that won it, Furyk led it in 2014. So I don't know if that was the year that he shot the 58, but I know he had a pretty good year. And Henrik Stenson has led it a couple of other times. Adam Scott led it another year too. Paul Casey led in 2017. So I'm just looking back off of that and the guys that have led it. And I mean, obviously, I think the most important thing in this discussion is what is the floor of the other factors?
Right.
I think that is the most important part here because if you're the worst at any of these stats, you're not. For example, like Boo Weekly was up there in the total driving and approach to green, but he's horrible on the green, so he can't putt. So he didn't last for a super long time, or his ball striking kept him going for a while. But then there's even flip sides of the coin of guys who can putt, but they can't get it off of the tee box. Like, Faxon, you know, he had a little bit of success, but he was never a elite player. One of the big dogs by any stretch.
I think I want to go strokes gained putting. I think I want to go strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained putting because if you are guaranteeing me that I'm going to be a bomber who's hitting it straight and hitting a bunch of fairways. If you combine that with the putting, that's what we saw from Bryson a couple weeks ago at Rocket Mortgage. That's what we see. When does Rory win a golf tournament? Anytime he gets hot with the putter. Anytime. Because he drives it so well. All it takes is hot with the putter for 4 days, tournament's over. I think I've changed my mind.
And that's why I think that it's the floor on the other ones because, like we'd mentioned with our Reed and Spieth, their best putting years were when they had some of their worst years overall, and that's because their ball striking was down or their chipping was horrible. So, in all reality, if you're horrible at any of these metrics, you're not going to be worth a damn.
Right.
So, or you're not going to last a whole long time if you're the very bottom. But if you have the floor, or if your floor is kind of the middle on both of them, I think it's really close between approach to green and putting. But if you're a middle of the road putter and you hit it close all the time, I think I would lean more towards that than vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely no one right answer. That's kind of where I was at before we started having the conversation. And then as the conversation progressed, I'm like, you know what? No, I think I want to hit bombs and make putts.
And you notice the one that we haven't even discussed approach to green or around the green.
Yeah,
because we and that's. especially for your weekend golfers, around the green is so important because you have a lot of those shots, and trying to avoid bogeys and especially double bogeys is very important. But if you're around the green, if you're leading that, it means it doesn't necessarily mean that you're missing a lot of greens, but at the same time, it's, if you had to choose the other metrics, you would want those more than you're having a chip, just because you shouldn't have to do that as much as you're doing everything else.
How about this? Let's think a little more outside the box. What if we could lead the tour in birdies or better and bogey avoidance?
Well, that's kind of what I was talking about with the metric. Yeah, which one do you want to choose? Yeah, obviously I want to make the most birdies. I want my scoring average to be the lowest. In all actuality, the only one I care about is the money list. So
right, yeah, lead on the money list and wins. Yeah, I mean, obviously those two correlate to each other.
Exactly.
But
so yeah,
we're kind of going strokes gain, which I feel like is more of a conventional metrics. Not conventional. Obviously, it's a more modern measurement of metrics. But whenever we're talking about who are the best drivers and the best putters and the best iron players, the metrics that we use nowadays are strokes gained. I think they give us the most accurate representation of who's good at what.
Yes, they absolutely do. And it's definitely, you know, because like total driving can be misleading just because it's an average of two numbers, doesn't necessarily portray the full picture. As we described in some of our analytics shows in the past, that you can still go back and check out, along with the player profiles that we mentioned as well. If you hadn't heard those are pretty cool. So I have my DraftKings value. Colby, is there anything else other than that before we get out of here?
I don't believe so. Give me a few names. We obviously very, not a deep field like what we had last week, but still a deep field in the sense that whoever 70th on the list could find himself in the top five, which was kind of the same last week with the Memorial, just for a very different reason. The field was so strong that there were so many guys who could be contenders. This week, the field is so weak that there could be a ton of contenders. So give us a few guys, handful that you like on DraftKings this week that we don't have in our lineups.
Yeah. We've listed off a few of them. A guy who's been playing pretty well lately and had a good finish here last year, I believe finished seventh, is Sam Burns, really young guy. Finished last three events, finished 17th, 30th, and 24th. With a top 10 here last year at 8,500 on DraftKings. He's a good guy. If you're kind of like Colby going around the middle of the pack kind of route, I think he's a guy to look at. Scrolling down, some of the guys that we had not mentioned already. And we had mentioned a lot of guys that I had liked already around the mid 7,000 range especially, so I'll scroll down a little more. We mentioned Taylor Gooch, 7,100. I think that's a guy to definitely look at if you're looking at for some value. A guy at 6,900 who's hasn't played particularly well, but I think can get you to the weekend is Jason Duffner. He's made four of the five cuts since the return to competition, but has not finished better than 41st in those three of four cuts made. But you're just trying to get to the weekend at that value, so I would be a guy to have a little bit of confidence throwing out there. And let's see, we already mentioned Stuart Sink. Then the couple of local guys who I think definitely have a chance to play well. Rian Gibson, 6,400. He is a guy that likes the birdie fest, as we know, shot the world record 55. I think he has a great chance to play well. Definitely get you to the weekend. And then guy bottom of the barrel, 7,000, made the cut in his only tour start since the return to golf. And another local guy played at OU, Michael Gellerman at 6,000. I think that he has a chance to get you to the weekend. I already made the cut in the one tour start that he played in. So if you are the opposite of me and Colby and you want to go top heavy, maybe get you a DJ Finau or a Koepka Fleetwood lineup and build around a really cheap guy, I think those are a couple names who could work out for you.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. 3M Open this week, TPC Twins.